Dynamic Thought, The Law of Vibrant Energy by William Walker Atkinson, narrated by James Harrington. Chapter 1. In the Beginning. This book will deal with life. It holds that life is universal, that it is inherent in and manifests in different degrees in every part, particle, phase, aspect, condition, place, or relationship in the world of things that we call the universe. It holds that life manifests in two aspects or forms, which are generally found by us in connection and cooperation with each other, but which are both, probably, an expression of some one thing higher than either. These two aspects or forms, which together go to make up or produce that which we know as life, are known as 1. Substance or matter, and 2. Mind. In this book, the term substance is used in preference to matter, owing to the fact that the term matter has become closely identified with certain ideas of the materialistic school of thought and has generally been regarded by the public in the light of dead matter, whereas this book holds that all substance is alive. The term mind is used in the sense of mind as we know it, rather than as mind as it is or as the cosmic mind. In some places, the term mind principle is used to convey the idea of a portion of the great principle of mind, of which that which we call mind is but a small and but partially expressed portion. These terms are explained and illustrated as we proceed. The aspect of energy or force is not treated as a separate aspect or form of life in this book, for the reason that it is regarded as merely a manifestation of mind, as will appear as we proceed. We have much to say regarding motion, but the writer has tried to explain and prove that, at the last, all motion results from mental action, and that all force and energy is vital mental force and energy. This book is not intended to run along metaphysical or theological lines. Its field is different. And so, while it recognizes the importance of these branches of human thought, still, it finds that its own particular field is sufficient to engross its entire attention for the moment, and, consequently, the aforesaid subject shall not be touched upon except incidentally, in connection with the subject matter of the book. This being the case, there will be no discussion of the origin of life, the question of creation, the problems of theology and metaphysics, the riddle of the why and wherefore of life and the universe. The writer has his own opinions upon these questions, but feels that this is not the place in which to air the same. For the purposes of the book, he prefers to leave every reader to his own favorite views and conceptions regarding these great subjects, feeling that the views regarding life, mind, motion, and substance that are advanced in this book may be accepted by any intelligent reader without prejudice to his or her accepted religious or philosophical views. The writer sees that this something called life exists. He finds it in evidence everywhere. And he sees it always in its aspects of substance and mind. And he feels justified in regarding life as always existing in and manifesting in these aspects, always in conjunction, at least life as we know it. And he finds certain apparent laws of life in operation in the universe to which all life, in all of its aspects, is apparently amenable. And he feels justified in considering these laws constant and invariable and unchangeable so long as the universe, as it now is, exists. And with the above views in mind, this book will proceed to a consideration of its subject without attempting to peer behind the veil separating the universe from its causer, life from its source. But in justice to reader, subject, and writer, the latter has thought it well to state that he does recognize not only the veil, but that which is behind the veil. To proceed without this statement would be unfair and misleading. The writer wishes to be understood positively upon this point, even though the declaration may bring forth the derisive jeer of those who feel that they have outgrown this conception, or else the calm, superior, pitying smile of those who feel that the universe is its own cause and effect. By universe, the writer means the whole body of things, Webster. His declaration means that he believes in that which is above things. The writer prefers not to attempt to define that which he calls the infinite. The word infinite means without limit in time, space, power, capacity, knowledge, or excellence, Webster. And to define is to limit, mark the limits of, mark the end of, etc. The term define, as applied to the infinite, is ridiculous, an absurd paradox. The writer echoes Spinoza's statement. To define God is to deny him. And so there shall be no attempt at definition or limitation. But the human mind, in considering the subject, is bound by its own laws to think of the infinite as real and actually being and existent, if it thinks of it at all.